Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Many of us spend a significant amount of time in our cars, commuting to work, running errands, going to see people, places, things. Driving is so commonplace that we can forget how dangerous it can be. The U.S. Department of Transportation estimates almost 41,000 people die in traffic fatalities in 2023, and there are tens of thousands of people seriously injured every year. Improving roadway safety is an ongoing effort, and today we discuss a new program on Cape Cod called Vision Zero Action Plan. The goal is to identify dangerous areas and eliminate fatalities and serious injuries for all users, pedestrians, cyclists, transit users, and drivers. In a few minutes, we'll talk with members of the Vision Zero Advisory Committee, but first we want to break down roadway safety data for our region. And joining us is David Nolan. He's Senior Transportation Planner with the Cape Cod Commission. Hi, David.
Morning, Minnie. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, let's start with the most recent data on Cape roadways. How many fatalities and serious injuries are we seeing each year? Is it pretty, common each year, or does it go up and down?
We've had some variation over the last couple of years. Obviously, the COVID pandemic was a tricky time trying to track how trends were going. So as part of this Vision Zero Action Plan, we're looking at fatal crashes, or we're looking at all crashes in our region from 2018 through 2023, which is a six-year window. Over that six-year window, we had 81 fatalities on Cape Cod due to motor vehicle crashes, 14 back in 2018, and then 14 again in 2023. So kind of over that period of time, it stayed steady. It dropped in 2019 and 2020. Coming out of the pandemic in 2021, we saw a spike up to 19 fatal crashes in that year. I think a lot of folks, you know, speeding was a factor, kind of that pent up feeling that you had. So yeah, Folks are driving a little bit more unsafe coming out of the pandemic, but we're starting to see its trend back down, which is kind of what brings us to this plan, is to try to see this thing trend down even more over time.
Yeah. How often are cyclists and pedestrians involved in fatal or serious accidents?
So we've been working through all the data here. So I mentioned 81 fatal crashes in our region over that six-year window. 13 of those was a pedestrian being involved in the fatal crash. There was only one bike fatality over that six-year window. Now, certainly that doesn't mean that there isn't risks for cyclists or the pedestrians in our region, because we saw 74 serious injury crashes for pedestrians and another 52 serious injury crashes for bicyclists. So just because we're only seeing one fatality for the bicyclists certainly doesn't mean that we're not going to take right. that very seriously as well, because one is too many.
And what is meant by serious injuries? You know, I'm thinking non-life-threatening injuries. They can be serious, you know, if you consider traumatic brain injuries or the loss of a limb or paralysis. So what do we determine as serious?
Yeah, so the word we use is incapacitating. So those are the injuries where, yes, you will survive. However, there is, you know, long-term effects. You mentioned brain injuries, maybe amputations in some cases, internal things that were, you know, you can't see on the surface. So those real serious injuries where it really affects the individual. It can really affect the family. It can affect your working career, things like that. You know, minor fender benders, right? We may have a sore neck for a few days. We're not including that as a serious injury. It's those life-altering injuries that we're considering to be the serious ones here.
Do you also keep track of the minor accidents?
Yes, we have. So overall in our region, over that six-year window, we're just shy of 30,000 reported crashes.
Wow.
On Cape Cod in that six-year window, which equates to about 5,000 per year. Again, we saw a drop during that 2020 year. I mean, kind of a spike coming out of that. But those are the reported crashes. And a reported crash does only includes crashes that include a motor vehicle. So this would not include a cyclist crashing kind of on their own, falling off a curb,
right.
Unless there was a vehicle involved as well. That's the only way these are being reported.
Yeah. How about distracted or driving under the influence? What are we seeing in trends there?
Yeah, so that's definitely something we've looked at as well. One of the breakdowns we did is kind of the contributing factors to the crashes in our region. Thinking about the fatal crashes in particular for this one, 38% of the fatal crashes involved speeding. The highest percent of a contributing code was reckless driving, which could be a combination of speeding, kind of that weaving in and out of traffic, aggressive driving. Since you bring up impaired driving, only 12% of the fatal crashes in our region over that 6-year time window were a result of impairment, which I think is a little bit lower than folks might expect. But again, 12% is still too high, something we need to look at, and certainly something we're going to look at too a little bit further of all the crashes that are reported in the region. We're starting with the fatal crashes, because that's really the goal, is to eliminate those.
And do you get this info from police, from reports that is that where that info comes from?
Yeah, so what happens is when there's a reported crash, police, state or local, respond. They fill out a crash report. That report gets filed and sent to the Registry of Motor Vehicles, which is then sent to the state transportation department. That's where we then get access to it. They have an online portal where we can pull this information. We keep track of this stuff all the time. We look at it at the local level for some of our planning studies or, some of our larger projects as well. So we've pulled everything over that 6-year window. But yeah, it starts at that local. It starts at the crash scene, and then it filters its way towards us.
So you have a breakdown too of ages and male versus female and all of that. You collect all of that info, right?
Yep, all that info is gathered. Time of day, weather conditions is something we want to look at as well. Light versus dark, especially this time of year, we have a real bad solar glare issue with the sun being low. That's information that gets captured as well. So we're really trying to look at all of the factors in these crashes to determine what can be some good countermeasures to improve the safety of our roadways.
How do we compare with other regions of similar populations in terms of road safety?
It's tricky because you're thinking statewide. That's where we do most of our work, with the Mass Department of Transportation. We have a crazy peak season, right? So in the summer we see a real spike in traffic volumes, which is when we can see our spike in challenges on the roadway. We're a little bit more similar to some of the western part of the state here, kind of with that seasonality. So, we're not Boston. We're not trying to compare ourselves to Boston or even Plymouth County area. So we have less fatal crashes. Of course, we have less folks, less travel during the off-peak season. So, seeing the downward trend is what we like to see. So that's how I like to kind of judge us. And so far, we're on the mark. Again, I mentioned those 14 fatal crashes last year. To me, that's 14 too many.
One of the things I'm thinking, I don't know if you keep this data too, but I'm amazed how many people don't stop for pedestrians in crosswalks and by schools. I live near a school, and it is amazing to me the people who go flying through those crosswalks.
Yeah, and there's been a real push. I know the state's put in a lot of money to getting school zone signage and improvements to crosswalks. There's a great Safe Routes to School program that Mass DOT has that we work with a lot to do walk audits to kind of understand what the pedestrian experience is like at these schools. So that way we can help on our end if there needs to be better signage, lighting, enforcement, or even just, notices to parents letting folks driving through the area know this is what's happening. How can you better prepare your child to be safer? And then how can we as drivers be safer for our kids on the road?
Maybe pay attention to that big thing that says 20 miles per hour, that flashing that tells you how fast you're going. Anything else stand out from the data in terms of, problem spots or causes of crashes that I'm not asking you about?
We're still early, so we're really diving through a lot of this data. We're looking at all 81 of these crashes. We've requested the crash reports from the state as well, so we're really going to dive into those 81 crashes to really find out exactly what happened. Some of the serious injury crashes as well. We want to find those hot spots. What major roads, which major intersections are those most likely to occur at? So that way we can, from a planning perspective, think about ways to improve that. And then working with our Vision Zero, action committee, working with police, working with town engineers and bike committees to come up with a holistic idea, work with the state so that we can improve that. One thing that we are doing is looking at the crashes in our environmental justice communities. 13 of our 81 fatal crashes were in those communities. So we want to make sure that they're not being left behind as well. We want to make sure we put an emphasis on those, and making sure we're not seeing those crashes in the future.
So when you're looking at things like blind spots or distractions, are people letting you know that, or are you looking at, hey, we seem to have a lot of, minor accidents or things happen in this particular spot? Are you using that kind of information, or do you have people calling, you know what, I live here and I see this thing, you know, happening all the time? Is there public input to that?
That's probably a really good natural segue to Colleen Medeiros, who's going to be joining
It's a
us in a
question for
moment, I think.
Colleen.
It could be, but there is a way for folks to let us know. Obviously, we get a ton of information with the crash reports and the information we have online. But there is those close calls that do not end up in a crash. So we do have an online public comment tool where we're asking folks, where are these close calls? Where are these dangerous intersections where there may have only been one or two crashes, but there's the potential for so much more. So we do have an online comment tool that folks have been able to fill out and let us know that information. So we can include that as well.
Great. All right. David, thanks so much for helping us better understand the data. That was David Nolan, Senior Transportation Planner with the Cape Cod Commission. David, thanks for being with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mindy.
866-999-4626 is our number. We're discussing roadway safety this hour. We want to hear from you and what you're seeing on your daily drive, walk, or ride. What suggestions do you have for improvements? 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about roadway safety this hour, and joining us now is Colleen Medeiros. She's Cape Cod Commission Transportation Program Manager. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Mindy. Thank you for having us
again. Sure. Sean Pauley is the Joint Transportation Committee Bike Representative. Hi, Sean.
Good morning.
Lieutenant Aram Goshgarian is with the Harwich Police Department. Good morning.
Morning.
And Rich Waldo, Director of Public Works and Natural Resources for the Town of Orleans. Hi, Rich.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, Colleen, give us some background on the Vision Zero Action Plan, not just the goals, but the phases and funding. Tell us a little more about it.
Sure. So thanks to the bipartisan infrastructure law out of Washington, D.C., there's a new grant program called the Safe Streets for All program, and it includes federal funding for towns and regional planning agencies to prepare a Vision Zero Action Plan to really look a deep dive into safety and address some of those hot spots areas. There's two phases I like to call it. So if a region already has an action plan, a deep safety plan or city, they can already move into phase two, which is implementation dollars. So there is money to fix areas that are high crash or high risk for a town or a region. Then there's also, if you don't have that, then you need the action plan. So as a regional agency, we saw the need for it. We have many of our interested towns, and that's what our role here at the Cape Cod Commission and the Transportation Department is, assisting our small towns getting funding for their region, assisting them with the data-driven approach. So we took advantage of it, went after it, and thanks to this bill, now all regions in the state of Massachusetts will be covered under this program. And so we're covering all 15 towns for Barnstable County. And right now we're underway with preparing the action plan grant, which is that deep dive analysis. And then hopefully, in a couple more months, we'll go through this process in the spring or so, have this available and finished. And then it's up to our towns then for next steps to implement improvements. Yeah. And they have this funding stream to potentially take advantage of based on some of the findings we find in this plan.
So some roadways are considered town-owned and others are state-owned. What roadways does the Vision Zero Action Plan apply to? Is it both?
It is both. So, we are looking at this. We want to be comprehensive. So we are looking at where all of our crashes are. We need to know the story, and we want to know where all the fatalities are. We did include Route 6 Mid-Cape Highway at the high level, but when we're going to be breaking down into the next phase of our action plan, where we're really looking at potential countermeasures, we're probably not going to include the Mid-Cape Highway. That's a little bit something MassDOT and the state need to focus on. And the purpose of this program is it's for funding for cities and towns. Mm-hmm. So we want to really focus on where our towns can assist with improving safety for their residents, their road users, walkers, bikers. But again, we want to know the story in general, what's happening on all of our roads, because what we're finding is, our higher speed roadways, most likely are owned by the state, but they are some of our riskier and more unsafe roadways just because inherently they're designed for higher speeds.
Right.
So, a little bit of both.
Yeah. All right. So the advisory committee is working to get feedback from the public, as we mentioned a little while ago, on air problem areas. And you've developed this interactive tool. Tell us about the tool and who you are hoping will use it.
Sure. So we have brought on a consultant. This is a big plan. So thanks to our consultant, we've prepared a public comment tool, and it allows users, if you go on our website, capecodcommission.org/vision0, they have a public comment tool. You can zoom into your street or an intersection that you drive through frequently and can plug in a dot. And it could be a location where you have an idea. You've been wanting a roundabout or a bike lane or a crosswalk, and you can let us know. You can also, as you heard earlier, we're looking for those locations that you just feel unsafe. You've had near misses. You've almost been hit because we can't get that through the data. So right now we have nearly 600 comments, and
Wow.
we also have about 100 replies. So if someone really wants to go in, you can go in and see what everyone else in our region has already commented on, and you can hit reply, say, I agree. So then we're also looking for locations that have more than one interest or reply, and really taking that into account as we start to prioritize locations that might need
Yeah.
improvements.
And Lieutenant Gashgarian, I bet being with the Harwich Police Department, you probably get suggestions a lot from the public going, hey, why don't we do something about, X, Y, or Z, right?
Yeah, and in fact, our town, like I think many, has a traffic safety committee. And, the local news around here just carried a story. We routinely meet with residents and get a lot of complaints brought forward about streets and intersections. And we've been able to, on the town level, make some changes that have greatly improved safety. So we do filter a lot of complaints, both through the police department and through traffic safety, that have led to some substantial changes in locations to help, make things safer for all users.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Jane, who's giving us a call from Chatham. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for looking into this. It's
Sure.
so important. And I'm really glad that there's a place where we can go now to just say what the problem is, because some of us tried to local government, and it was a little bit more difficult. So I'm really glad about this website. And also, just the thing about one of the things that probably nobody can do anything about safety is that all cars and trucks are getting so big now, so that the sedans are much less safe because there's more bulk on the road. So if I get into an accident in a sedan with a truck, chances are it's going to be pretty bad. And also that I'm concerned about driverless cars, because they're not ready for prime time yet, because they don't recognize a lot of unsafe things on the road. The computer can't understand what it is. And then if they get into an accident, sometimes nobody knows how to get into the car or how to adjust what's happening. I hope I'm
Yeah. No,
verbalizing that,
yeah,
but
no,
yeah, those are a
I'm
couple
following
of
you,
the
Jane.
things. Yeah.
Jane's bringing up a good point too, and I'm just thinking as she was mentioning that, the design of our roads and evolution of Cape roadways, there's this perception that our roads were designed for a different time, right? And some of them, like you look on the
Yeah.
vineyard, they're like old paths, right? And I can remember my first, I now, we've come away in our GPS, but where a lot of the roads, it looks like I'm traveling on nothing because the computer's not recognizing this very old road. So what about Jane's concerns about driverless cars? And is that even anything we're likely to see in the near future? Future? Anybody can chime in on that.
I mean, I think that's testing out west, in the Silicon Valley, San Francisco, Los Angeles area, that's been going on. But that does bring a concern, definitely. We've been hearing that. And luckily, this FHWA in Washington, D.C., and the Massachusetts Department of Transportation is taking a new look at safety, and it's called a safe systems approach, against being more proactive than reactive. And they're trying to get together everyone in the realm of safety. So it's not just, you know, right now we're this Vision Zero Action Plan is doing what we can. We're focused on slowing vehicles down, making roads safer and more walkable. But the part of the safe system approach also is ensuring we have safe vehicles. So the Washington, D.C. is trying to bring in the automakers as well and to really bring into conversation of how can we, additional technology in vehicles that we can improve safety, bringing in the conversation about post-care when you respond to accidents and so ensuring that those people are potentially can be saved. So there's a lot of great things we need to look at from the United States to Europe's doing. Other states in the United States have the other technology that Massachusetts doesn't allow by legislature. So there's things that, you know, as a country, we need to look to. And that's a great point, though, bringing forward all the different types of vehicles, autonomous mobility options. Yeah. I know Rich brings up e-scooters, the e-bikes now. The nature of our roadways is changing. So,
yeah, Rich, what about those e-scooters? I mean, it's almost like, you know, some people know the rules of bikes on the road, some do not. But then you bring in the e-bikes, you know, we have them not only on the roads, but on the bike paths. And it's sort of like, what are the rules for the e-bikes? Is it the same as a bicycle? Is it like a moped? What is the, you know?
Well, I think it's very important for us to acknowledge that there is a changing landscape on the modes of transportation and that we need to incorporate it into our action plan, because I think in the last 10 years, we've seen quite a bit of change in the different modes of transportation. I mean, the one that was just brought up by the caller, driverless vehicles, for sure, that's one of them. But you do have the electric bikes that can travel quite fast. They are expected to follow the same rules, but that they are a lot faster than your traditional bikes. We have scooters now that can go up to 15, 20 miles per hour. We have one wheel, I don't know what I'd call it. I don't know if it's a bike, if it's a vehicle, but it's a one wheel. And I believe I just read an article recently about someone that traveled from California to Massachusetts on a one wheel. The changing landscape is something that we need to look at. I don't think there's a lot of data out there yet, but it's something that I know with the commission raised this up a couple of times, something that we need to look at. What should we be doing to plan for it in the future? What is the expected time frame for more changes to happen? And we need to be cognizant of that change.
Right. And of course, then education comes with all of that, right? We need to tell people, you know, what the rules are. And I'm wondering too, about speed bumps. I'm sure you guys just get inundated with all of these things that people would like to see. And for years, I've gone, why don't we have speed bumps outside of every school? You know, where I just talked about people flying. And I think at one point somebody told me, well, it doesn't work with the snowplows, but there's speed bumps in other places the snowplows seem to have no problem with. So, you know, why aren't we, you know, wouldn't that be a great option in at least the school zones, is having speed bumps? And is that something, I don't know, Colleen, is that something people have looked at?
Yeah, it's a proven countermeasure. So I think it's more education and getting our towns to try that. And that's what this program could potentially do, is they're encouraging some pilots for towns to try, say they want to try it. So there's funding. And I don't know if Rich or Sean are, you know, more on the implementation side for their towns could speak to that. But it's definitely something worthwhile, I think. Yeah. You know, we see some towns implementing it.
Yeah.
I can speak to it a little bit and then hand it off to Sean. I mean,
sure.
There's no doubt that we get calls all the time for traffic improvement measures. Like Harwich, we have our own transportation bikeway committee that fields a lot of concerns from residents and what we can do, what we can't do. Recently, we have been trying what we call a speed table. It's much like a speed hump, but it's a little flatter on the top. It's a little more of a smoother transition, and it's temporary, something to try it out. And, you know, the results were favorably. You know, they do work, they do slow down speeds. But some of the concerns that we've heard over time is it's a little more noisy. It takes a wear on my vehicle when I go over them, my trailer, my landscape equipment. You know, we do get some calls and concerns about bikers that can't see this speed table or the speed bump at night, and you know, it was, they come up on it and basically almost sends them flying. So we hear both sides of the stories. So I think the application needs to be right. The town needs to support it, and basically over repetition and time, people understand and know that it's there. So sometimes it takes a little bit for the community to get used to that change in transportation. I think that's one of the more difficult challenges that we face, is getting over that transition period before the outcry comes out from the
Makes
public.
sense. Yeah. Sean, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I do. Not only am I the bike representative on the Joint Transportation Committee, I'm also chairman of the Sandwich Bikeways and Pedestrian Committee. And we've had a lot of conversation in Sandwich lately about crosswalks and the coloring even of those crosswalks, the visibility of those crosswalks, the consistency of those crosswalks. We have some crosswalks in our downtown area that are red brick or some kind of material that is representative of red brick, so that there's a feeling when you're rolling over them of, you know, a little bit of bumpiness awareness. Obviously, you want people to be aware of the crosswalk before they get to them, and that's where the color conversation comes in, is to improve the visibility of those crosswalks. We're undertaking right now a crosswalk inventory. There had been one that was done a couple of years ago, and it was sitting in a database. We've extracted that data. We've added to it. There's like 140 crosswalks in the town of Sandwich and growing, because we're adding some with our new shared use path on the service road. We, as a bike committee, are going out and visiting those crosswalks and assessing the current state of being in terms of, you know, what are the sight lines? Is there signage? Is there ADA accessible endpoints? Does the paint, is the paint fading? All of these things, so that we have a real hands-on observation of what those crosswalks look like, so that we can prioritize what needs to be improved.
Yeah, sounds good. We got a few emails here, and some of them about bicycles in particular. I've been long distance cycling on the Cape and Islands for 25 years. I'm a respectful and cautious cyclist. In my opinion, driver behavior towards cyclists has been getting worse. I've consistently had aggressive drivers try to run me off the road, throw things at me, and give me the finger. How can we address this behavior?
Well,
Yikes.
it's multifaceted for sure. There's definitely competition for the roadways between cyclists and motorists. I think it's, you know, there's a few things that we've already talked about here. There's codification of rules, there's awareness of those rules, and there's enforcement of those rules. So the Vulnerable Road Users Act was passed, I think, last year or earlier this year. So you've probably seen cropping up in towns across the Cape these 4-foot cyclist signs. Make sure that you are allowing 4 feet of distance between you and a cyclist when you're passing them on the roadway. So the state made those available to towns. Towns have been installing them. I've seen them in both Sandwich and surrounding towns. You know, creating that awareness, but it's not just awareness, it's the fact that that's now the law. And so people need to adhere to the law. Now, do people adhere to speed limits? No. Do people adhere to 4-foot passing zones? No. I mean, many do, but some do not. And so that's where there's an enforcement piece. The 4-foot passing zone is probably a very difficult thing to enforce. But by having those signs out there, it's creating that awareness, that's what you need to allow. A cyclist is entitled to the roadway as much as a motorist is, and there's definitely etiquette and there's definitely nuances to those rights. But oftentimes motorists forget that.
Yeah. I think they don't know. Yeah, they don't know the rules. Here's another one. Joe from East Orleans says, please ask your guests if a potential bike slash walking lane along Beach Road in Orleans might be eligible for this funding. Such a lane would greatly improve safety. I guess, Rich.
We're going to dive into the data, and we're identifying where these crashes are happening, and you know, if that's one of the roads we're seeing that it is a high injury network, that's what we're developing, it's called. Mm-hmm. And then we're also developing a high risk network. So MassDOT has this data for us that I'm calling it dangerous by design. So these roads are inherently more susceptible to crashes. So our four lane roads that are undivided, our two lane roads that have a 45 or 40 mile per hour speed limit. So that's likely where they're coming, but there could be local roads that we just know that we're having issues with. So if that one pops up, then we can have the discussion about what potential remedies and countermeasures could be that. But I would just like to point out, so there's many regions and towns that are ahead of us in this funding program, which FHWA, the city of Lynn is one. They already had a completed action plan. They just won an implementation grant for $9 million.
Wow.
And the goal of that is really not to just build a $9 million bike path on one road. The goal of it is to use that $9 million to do quick build interventions and try, you know, improve as much as you can for your bang in the buck using, you know, maybe there might be some formal in long term, but maybe even just using paint and piloting, you know, speed humps, mm-hmm. just really slowing the vehicles down. So that's what the DOT would like to see, is also just trying to make safety throughout your town change.
Yeah. We have another email from Karen in Orleans. She says, noticing very few people actually yield at tidal signs, especially at the rotaries in Orleans. After travel in the heavy tourist area in Normandy, France, which had locals, businesses, truck traffic, businesses, bikers, etc., they use small islands in the centers to slow folks down, hourglass-like, and bigger, longer, wider humps to slow down fast-moving and high-volume cars. Could be used near many beach roads. Karen, thanks for that suggestion. I imagine you're getting all kinds of feedback. And do you have some examples of the information people are adding to, you know, via that interactive map? Are you seeing things that you went, huh, why didn't we think of that? Or is it more of, oh, yeah, we've thought of that?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't thought of it all. So we're definitely getting some enlightenment. We're seeing, you know, some of the ones that we already know of. Route 130, Route 151 are the speed limit's too high. It's unsafe for a ped bike. So everyone kind of already knows that, but it's good to hear and reinforce it. You know, as an engineer, that's what we think, but we want to make sure the general public agrees with that too. We're seeing, you know, people thinking of unique ideas for, you know, more bike education, right? Or bike volunteer patrols. There's some unique ideas, you know, and that's what we want to see of people that are well-traveled, that go to Europe, go to, you know, other states that we can bring back to try on our roads. So we're definitely, the public comments tool is still open. It will be till the end of the year. But we're sifting through nearly 600 of them right now, and then we'll have some more public meetings held in November timeframe. So, looking forward to some more discussion about some unique areas or even ideas.
Yeah, bring on those ideas, right?
Yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address: thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing roadway safety this hour. If you have thoughts or a question, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Colleen Madero. She's the Cape Cod Commission Transportation Program Manager. Sean Pauley is the Joint Transportation Committee Bike Representative. Lieutenant Aram Goshgarian is Harwich Police Department. And Rich Wildo is Director of Public Works and Natural Resources for the Town of Orleans. Jeffrey is giving us a call from South Yarmouth. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Lindy.
Yep.
I just wanted to toss out that stop signs sometimes are difficult to come up on. They're kind of sometimes they're obscured, and also It seems from observations of people I've driven around with, it's very dark on the Cape at night very often.
Mm-hmm. Tough to see.
You know, yeah. Sort of banging off the mainland or whatever. It's like out being out to sea in a car, you know.
Mm-hmm. So tough to see. Jeffrey,
so I just wanted to throw those out.
Yeah.
Something they could incorporate into their program. You bet.
Yeah, Jeffrey, thanks for that. That's true. I mean, we've seen that sometimes where, you know, the vegetation covers up a stop sign or it's in an area that it's tough to see. And Colleen, that's pretty much the towns who take care of that, right? I mean, yeah, right.
Yes, the road owner, whether it's the state of the town, and, you know, towns do the best they can. But so if anyone does see one, just call your town and let them know. I'm sure then they can react. Simple changes like that can make a difference, you know, so because we do have a lot of we're a tourist area, so people aren't familiar. They may come up on a stop sign that catches them off guard.
Right.
And we do hear the roadway lighting, how we're just dark down here in general. That is a common theme we hear on our regular public outreach. So definitely something that can be a countermeasure is roadway lighting on our areas where we're seeing maybe some nighttime crashes.
Right. Lieutenant Gosharian, I'm just thinking about, you know, we've long used laws and enforcement to make roadways safer. How effective are traffic laws? What are the challenges with enforcement and what are other options are there for increasing safety? I'm thinking even like we're talking about the e-bikes and bicycles, the same rules apply, right? I mean, you can be arrested for OUI riding an e-bike. Bike, right?
Yeah, that's correct, Mindy. The trouble with all the modes of transportation that are out there now is law enforcement are trying to decipher what rule applies to what mode. Like Rick was saying, there's the one wheels, there's the e-bikes. Mm-hmm. There are so many different, and they are required to still follow the rules of the road. So from an enforcement standpoint, it's not as difficult, but, you know, I do, you know, want to talk about when it, you know, comes to the bicycle crossings, because I heard one of the, you know, someone I think email in about that. That is a problem spot for us. And also crosswalks, pedestrian crosswalks, because a lot of people are under the illusion, especially pedestrians, that if they're stopped waiting to cross the street, people have to stop for them. And unfortunately, in Massachusetts, that's not the law. You actually have to step foot into the road to cause the traffic to stop, which I never really
I never
understood.
Heard that either.
Just standing there does not require somebody to stop, because how we see this in if you've been to downtown Howardsport in the summer, it's gotten very, very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you see people, you know, when I'm working, I'll stop for somebody if they look like they're going to cross, but you know, people simply aren't required to do so, and that has caused a lot of issues for us. A lot of people get very upset when someone's not going to stop to let them cross the street. At the bike crossings, most of ours now, with very few exceptions, are covered by the flashing yellow lights to alert people there's someone coming up. But the issues we encounter there are we see our fair share of road rage, if you will, people screaming and yelling at the bicyclists because they dare to want to ride their bike or get off and cross the road. So that we have tried to counter that. We have done some bike trail enforcement with our bicycle patrol unit. Mixed results.
Mm-hmm.
But enforcement, you know, it goes beyond pulling people over and writing tickets. A lot of what we do is education. Hey, did you know?
Right.
You're going too fast. You're going to, and collecting the data and targeting areas that there are problems in. It can go a long way.
It seems like that does seem like across the board, education seems to be the key, because, you know, people sometimes don't, like you say, know that the bikes have the same rules of the road as the cars, right? They have as much right to be there. People, I think a lot of people don't even know that. So what are we doing on the education front, especially when it comes to, like, you know, bicycles? How are we helping people understand what the rules are?
When we have an opportunity to encounter somebody, like if I do on bike trail enforcement, that's an opportunity to tell people. We can push it out through social media. We can, unfortunately, a lot of this stuff is if people want to listen to what they want to listen to, like the new 4-foot law. I mean, a lot of this comes down to the infrastructure here,
right?
You know, on the Cape and Islands,
it's just hard isn't to get a lot 4 feet space some places.
You know, the big thing is why everyone in such a rush. I think Colleen said there's people doing 80 miles. If you're doing 80 miles an hour on Route 3 heading up to Boston, you're getting passed. There's no, everybody is impatient to get somewhere. You can't give the bicyclists the extra 5 minutes so you can wait for a break so you can legally pass them on the, go around them. And that's a lot of what we see now. It's just everybody is so impatient in a rush.
People have to slow down a little bit, right?
Slow down.
Go ahead, Colleen.
I would just, there is opportunity and room for improvement. And Safe Routes to School is a program through the state. Every school, public school in Massachusetts, can apply for this, and they can bring education to the classroom and teach kids how to use a crosswalk, teach kids how about riding the bike, wearing your helmet, being safe.
Seems like the kids know what they're doing. It's the adults who are having the trouble.
So it's the next generation. If one thing through all of this is, we really just need to humanize this, because I found out this is a leading cause of deaths for youth is car crashes. So if we can just think about our families, our neighbors, our friends, and that these aren't just statistics. Unfortunately, we're looking, we're trying to humanize this. These are people's loved ones. And just be kind,
A few seconds to change your life in a bad
you're
way.
You're still going to get there.
All right. Let's talk to Eben, giving us a call from West Tisbury. Hi, Eben.
Hello. I live in Los Angeles. There's a tremendous amount of bike traffic in the summer. But what really irks me is that they don't follow the rules of the road as they should. They never stop at stop signs, or rarely. Never signal intended turns, and drive right across crosswalks. They're supposed to dismount.
Evan, thanks for the call. That's just what we were saying. Some, they don't always follow the rules, or don't always know the rules, right? Thanks for the call, Evan. Pat is calling from Dennis. Hi, Pat.
Yes, hi, Mindy and everybody. I'm very involved with the student program in the summer, the J1 program, where we have hundreds, not thousands, of kids coming. I've got this theory, and I've had it for years, but I just don't know how to see we could implement it. If those kids were getting fined, I'm kind of flipping it to the bicycles now as opposed to the traffic. If they were getting a $25 fine every time they were coming home from work without a vest and light, I just think that word would spread in the community so fast, because the vests are absolutely readily available. Mm. I mean, Ocean City has them for $2, literally.
Yeah.
But wouldn't a $25 fine every time put a stop to, at least increase the visibility, because that to me is the major problem.
Pat, thanks for the idea and the suggestion. It's not as easy. You can't just all of a sudden, you got to have legislation. There's a process, right, Colleen? You can't just say, okay, we're going to give you a $25 fine. But Pat, it's a good idea. Thanks.
Yeah.
Frank is calling from Chatham. Hi, Frank. Frank, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Hi. Harwich and Chatham are both lucky and with the Cape Cod Rail Trail, but the summer seasonal workers, God bless them, seem to have taken, in addition to bicycles, to the e-bikes that you're referring to. And my question is related to the 4 foot. When you're on a two-lane road, which has a double stripe or a stripe, bill passing, and you want to give them 4 feet, you're going to be moving over the white line. And is that going to be legal to do that? I guess that's the question.
Yeah. Okay. Lieutenant Koscari, is it legal?
Yeah, the law does allow for that, too. It's the only way they could make it work under that exception, because they recognize a lot of these roads. If you give a bicyclist or a pedestrian 4 feet, or an e-bike user, whatever it is, your lanes are 10, 11 feet wide. You have to be permitted to, in that instance, when it's safe to cross over into the other lane and pass. That's kind of what I was referring to a little bit earlier about, and it may not be germane to this question, but being patient and just waiting for that opportunity. They're just trying to get out there. And he's right that we do have the bike path, but a lot of, I have friends that are avid bicyclists. The bike trail is, if you are going to, put your head down and go, is more for, I run on the bike trail. People walk with their kids and their bicycles. And if you're intent on riding and getting a good ride in, it may not necessarily be the best thing. You're constantly dodging and weaving. And so there are still a lot of bicyclists in the street, probably for that reason.
Yeah.
but the law does allow for it. So,
Frank, thank you for the phone call. I'm sure you get a lot of, why can't they put a stop sign or a stoplight here or whatever particular intersection? And Colleen, as an engineer here, there's a lot more to it than that, right? You might consider that when you're seeing there's a lot of accidents, you know, minor, what have you, but you have to look at the traffic flow down the line, right? You can't put a stoplight everywhere.
Correct. Yep. So traffic signals have to meet a certain warrant based on most likely volume. We've get requests all the time. Dave on our staff runs a traffic counting program. So you a lot of times run over our road tubes in the road. We're mm-hmm. gathering all that data and studying that. And you have to meet a certain threshold from a turning movement volumes to install traffic signal. You can install signals for other reasons, such as based on crash occurrence as well. So we are looking at that. And similarly, four-way stops is something that's up and coming. The state's really looking at that. It's becoming a proven countermeasure, and we're seeing it pop up a little bit more. It's not as strict as a warrant analysis, but you do want to make sure they're in their appropriate places. So you are doing traffic counts to make sure you're not putting a stop signs on Route 28 necessarily, mm-hmm. stopping yeah. a four-way stop. So there is appropriate areas that can be installed as a countermeasure, and you might see more of that.
Yeah, I was gonna, in my neighborhood, they put up a four-way stop at Mira Vista and Randolph Street mm-hmm. because, I mean, there's been a lot of accidents there, and it goes down to the beach, right?
Yep.
But as they put those stop signs in, people who
yes.
are used to not having that stop sign, you still have to be careful because they're until you go back to that transition period, right? Until everybody gets
right.
used to it. And I imagine when the summer folks come back, there's probably going to be a little bit of a problem there for a while until
yep.
they get used
same,
to it, right?
The Bourne rotary striping was all new. We're
oh,
gonna get
right.
used to that this summer too. So yeah. you might see some flashing stop signs pop up at some intersections where people are having trouble obeying.
Yeah. All right. So getting back to the Vision Zero timeline, how can people get involved and what are the next phases of the project?
So we are going to be having a series of in-person public meetings in the November timeframe. November 12th, we'll be at Snow Library in Orleans in the evening around 5:30. We'll be in Sandwich on Thursday, November 21st in the evening as well. And that's at the Center for Active Living. And then we'll be at Barnstable Town Hall on Tuesday, December 3rd in the evening as well. And those will be opportunities for the public to attend and really see some of this data that we've been talking about, meet with members of the advisory committee, ourselves, and start talking about and learning about what some of our high-risk roads and high-injury roads, and that what can we do to improve those. If you can't attend those, we know, that there's a lot going on. We do have the website, and on the website, we have a recording of a virtual meeting we held in September, so you can review that. There's our public comment tool as well, and we also have links to the Vision Zero Advisory Committee. They've already met twice. We have probably three more meetings with that membership, and we are posting materials and presentations from that meeting as well. Or you can always just give me a call at the Cape Cod Commission or an email as well. But we'll be having another second series of public meetings probably in the February timeframe mm-hmm. When we'll be presenting some of the actions to the action plan that we're proposing. And again, we hope, this is really for our towns. So we want to make sure it's something reasonable. So maybe you'll start hearing more about it at select board meetings and through the DPW directors and the town planners as well.
And we'll
we really would love involvement.
Yeah, so get involved. We'll post links with more information on Vision Zero, public information sessions, and the interactive mapping tool at our website, capeandislands.org. Colleen Medeiros, Cape Cod Commission Transportation Program a Manager, and Sean Polley, Joint Transportation Committee Bike Representative, Lieutenant Aram Gashgarian, Harwich Police Department, and Rich Waldo, Director of Public Works and Natural Resources in the Town of Orleans. Thanks so much for all of you being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.